What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Sean Altman, the singer-songwriter and a cappella vocal wizard who is the creator of the very funny musical duo Jewmongous. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Cohen and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a pretty inarguable statement to say that humor in America wouldn't be what it is without Jews. In fact, we've often noted on Too Jewish that the list of famous Jewish comedians is more or less the same thing as the list of famous American comedians. From Groucho Marx to the Three Stooges to Jack Benny to George Burns to Sid Caesar to Mel Brooks to Carl Reiner to Nichols and May to Woody Allen to Alan King to Jackie Mason to Robert Klein to Joan Rivers to David Steinberg to Richard Lewis to Jerry Seinfeld to Larry David to Adam Sandler to Sacha Baron Cohen to Seth Rogen, we Jews have been virtually synonymous with American comedy. And I could easily list three times that many more comedians who have devastated audiences in clubs, on the small TV screen, and, of course, on the big movie screen. Well, we are good at being funny, and have been so, in America at least, for well over 100 years. In part, this is because we Jews know a great deal about suffering, and, as many comedic observers have noted, including Lenny Bruce, comedy is just tragedy plus time. We have surely known tragedy and thus have had lots of time to figure out how it can become truly funny. In part, we've also long understood that taking the world at its word, believing in all the pompous rulemaking that the irrational rulers insist is so important, is ultimately ridiculous. We Jews tend to be a pretty irreverent bunch. Finally, we're funny because we Jews also have a remarkable ability to laugh at ourselves, and that skill has proven to be a great benefit to our surviving in what is often a difficult world. And if you can successfully laugh at yourself, then you can laugh at, well, pretty much anything. It's this unique combination of pathos, irreverence, and self-deprecation that makes Jews so good at humor. But in addition to the jokes, one-liners, sketch comedy, and improvisation on themes that we enjoy as Jewish humor, there's another form that's not quite as well known, but in which we Jews have also excelled for decades. And that is the field of musical humor, both in parody form and original compositions. While Alan Sherman was certainly the best-known and perhaps most popular of these Jewish comedic troubadours, the tradition of Jewish comedy singing goes back to Eastern Europe, and the famed Badachans, who would entertain at weddings with funny songs that sometimes touched on the risque. In America, that immigrated tradition translated into Yiddish comedy singers like Molly Picon and Menashe Skolnick, Fanny Bryce and Sophie Tucker, even Al Jolson. And then the funny shtick compositions of Mickey Katz. Later, in new forms, Jewish comedy songs became the brilliant satirical composing and writing of Tom Lehrer, Alan Sherman's popular parodies, Kinky Friedman's anarchic Jewish country music, and recently even Rick Moranis' tribute to Jewish comedy song. I must admit to a serious weakness for funny Jewish songs, especially clever and well-composed ones, whether they are parodies of existing tunes or original works. Having written far too many Jewish parodies of show tunes and rock songs, I must admit that my standards for the quality of parody lyrics and production is pretty high. But hearing original songs well-parodied, or at least paralleled, is a great pleasure. Nowadays, the Maccabees do a wonderful job of this, and Doug Kotler has some delightful cuts, too. But the truth is, no matter how great a comedic parody can be, there is something a little more impressive in the composing and writing of an original, funny Jewish song. In the Jewish musical world today, young Michelle Citrin has some fine holiday tunes out, and my friend Rabbi Joe Black has written a couple of delightful funny ones. But when I happened to bump into the following song on YouTube, I knew that I had found a truly original and wonderful Jewish comedic musical talent. And so to play us in this fine morning, here's the song that introduced me to Sean Altman of Jubungus when I was hunting around for a new Passover song earlier this year.
We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. The year was 1492. Hitler had just invaded Poland. Madonna had just become a Jew. Moses was found on the Potomac. Then he marched with Martin Luther King. He came back to free us from our bondage, 'cause S&M has never been our thing. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So they chase us to the border, there's a parting of the water. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. And the Pharaoh, who looked like Yul Brynner, heard the Jews were trying to escape. Charlton Heston came right down from the mountain. He said, Pharaoh, you're a damn dirty ape. The menorah was almost out of oil. Farrakhan was planning Kristallnacht. The gefilte was nearing extinction. It looked like Moses and his flock were verkocht. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. But we knew how to resist, 'cause we'd read in Schindler's List. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
The 10 Egyptian plagues.
One.
Blood.
Two.
Locusts.
Three.
Boils.
Four.
Dandruff.
Five.
Acne.
Six.
Bacne.
Seven.
Piles.
Eight.
Cataracts.
Nine.
Sciatica. Sickle cell anemia.
We fled on foot, there was no time to tarry. Leavening the bread would take too long. All we had was egg foo young and matzah while battling the fearsome Viet Cong. And so tonight we gather to remember the ancient Hebrews who paid the price. We have a Seder each year in December to commemorate our Savior Jesus Christ. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So we never did succumb to the annual pogrom. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
Let's eat.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
Let's eat.
They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So come on, roll the shofar, 'cause they haven't nailed us so far. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
That was Sean Altman's They Tried to Kill Us, We Survive, Let's Eat, a completely fractured version of Jewish history that manages to be both politically incorrect and absolutely hysterical. I've been enjoying funny Jewish songs throughout my life, but I don't think I've ever heard a Passover song that was quite that amusing, ever. Now, if Sean Altman can make fun of our great Freedom Festival, just imagine what he can do with the inherently amusing institution of Bar Mitzvah. Actually, you don't have to imagine it. This is his Jumungus tribute to the Bar Mitzvah, Today I Am a Man.
I've got two pubic hairs and a three-piece suit.
Today I am a man.
I'm getting Bar Mitzvah just to make some loot.
Today I am a man.
Mom's all whacked out on Percocet. Dad's back from Reno with a slutty brunette. And here comes Uncle
with Emily. I wish she wasn't 8 inches taller.
That was Sean Altman's tribute to the Bar Mitzvah, Today I Am a Man, who can't drink or vote or stay up past 10. Well, when we come back this morning, we'll talk with the composer of that Beach Boys takeoff, our delightful guest, Sean Altman, about a cappella music, being a secular Jew, and his rebirth as the funniest Jewish musician on the planet, when we return right here on Too Jewish.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Jewish this morning our guest, Sean Altman. He is one of the most talented and highly entertaining musicians, singers, songwriters, comedians that you will ever encounter. I have a confession to make. Although I had seen this show, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, which gave him his perhaps greatest public success, I didn't really know about his diverse ability, and in particular Jewmungus, maybe the funniest set of Jewish songs and funniest Jewish performing group I've ever seen. Good morning and welcome, Sean.
Thanks for having me. Let's face it, Rabbi, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego is a very joyous show, and
yes.
If you had you watched it, I would think less of you.
I really appreciate that, Mike. on the other hand, you really got.
If you also, if you watched it, that, you know, what self-respecting Jewish man is not working somewhere at 5 o'clock every weekday afternoon?
Absolutely.
You know.
Insane. So you got your start really doing a cappella music. What were your first musical influences?
I'm a Beatles fanatic, so as a songwriter, I think the Fab Four are my biggest influence. But I grew up listening to Motown and R&B and the Mills Brothers and the Four Freshmen and Beach Boys, some musical theater. So I'm kind of a hodgepodge of all different influences. I'm also a child of the 70s, so I have, you know, I have a little bit of Led Zeppelin influence, probably. But the only kind of music that I actively dislike is contemporary country music, and I want to apologize to contemporary country fans for saying this.
You know, they probably do not form the largest sector of the Jewish community of America, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. So I figure I'm safe saying that.
Two guys came to mind for me when I saw some of your stuff. Tom Lehrer, who I grew up on, who was Jewish, who wrote some of the most searing political satire, and a little bit of Alan Sherman mixed with
A lot wilder stroke of humor. Are you familiar with those guys? Did they influence you at all?
Yeah, I'm familiar with them, but I don't own any albums, and I know that Alan Sherman is, he's more of a parodist.
Yes.
And I'd like to think that I'm, as an original songwriter, I'd like to think that that writing original lyrics and melodies is, puts me in a different class from him, even though he's very popular, and I'm grateful for the comparison. I'm not familiar with Tom Lehrer. I know like one song of his, but people tell me that I like him.
Yeah,
so I guess maybe I should do some research.
You have channeled him. I do not think I'd laughed as hard at a song as I did at Christian Baby Blood since I'd heard his Poisoning Pigeons in the Park. So,
thank you very much. You know, that song makes my parents nervous.
Yes.
They're always afraid that people are going to take me seriously and someone's going to get angry with me. But, you know, to me, one of my goals with this project is to connect with my Jewishness in the way that I know how, which is via songs and via lyrical exploration. But also one of my missions is to dispel the egregious stereotypes that have been heaped upon our people. And the blood libel is one of those that falls into that category. So I think, like, wow, what better way to poke fun at the absurdity of the blood libel than to have a drinking song about the joys of drinking Christian baby blood and to set it to the timbre of an Irish shanty.
Yeah, if you can make humor out of the blood libel, you have done something really unique in human history. We will talk much more with our delightful guest, Sean Altman, this morning when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that I've been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website by streaming them from there or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Too Jewish, Haikus for Jews from Zen Judaism. Today, mild schwitzing. Tomorrow, so hot you'll plots. 5-day forecast, feh. That was a haiku for Jews, a koan of Zen Judaism. Our guest this morning, the extraordinarily talented Sean Altman, has a very funny song in his alter ego as Jumungus. It's called, Taller Than Jesus.
I'm not bragging, don't mean to blaspheme, but Jesus was a short dude, at least compared to me. The average guy at the time of Christ was 4'9" to 5'5". I'm taller than Jesus. I said, I'm much taller than Jesus. I'm taller than Jesus. He was long on love, but short of limb. My t-shirt fits like a dress on him. He could heal the sick and save your soul, but he couldn't dunk a basketball. I'm taller than Jesus. I said, I'm much taller than Jesus. I'm taller than Jesus. You see, Jesus walked on water, turned water into wine. But if you want to change that light bulb, call me, I'm divine.
That was the quite ridiculous Taller Than Jesus by our guest this morning, Sean Altman of Jumungus. Listen, if you can't be sacrilegious in a comedy song, you just aren't trying hard enough. We welcome our Mivi Nahan, Israel Oshrat Bar-El, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Yesh Atid, the party of the middle class in Israel, led by Yair Lapid, the great telegenic hero of Israel, has now been part of government for more than a year. Lapid has been economic minister. And after all, that party came to power in large part because of economic protests in the summer, 2 years ago and hugely 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel like has been accomplished in the Israeli economy? Do people feel better about things? Do they believe that things are going in the right direction more than they did before? Is it too early to tell?
You know, whenever I'm thinking about how Yair Lapid started his, you know, the political process and what he accomplished, the only thing I can think is things that you see from there you can't see from here.
Yeah,
and unfortunately or fortunately, Bibi Netanyahu gave him the Treasury Ministry,
the Economic Ministry, right? So the Treasury.
Treasury Ministry, yeah, Economic Ministry, and I think that he came with a lot of goodwill, a lot of good intentions. Not a lot of experience how to do things.
He was a TV media guy.
Yeah, and much more than that. He wrote books. He's a literary guy.
Comes from a political family.
Tommy Lapid is his father. Tommy Lapid is his father. Very talented and smart.
Very bright guy.
Yeah. It's more than a TV show. But I think, like, in terms of experience to lead such office like a treasurer.
It's a very technical ministry, you would think. It takes a lot of knowledge of the economy.
A lot of knowledge and a lot of... and he came with a lot of aspiration, I would say. I don't know.
Yeah, goals, high goals.
Yeah, like in 2 years, every average family will be able to buy an apartment.
On the beach in Tel Aviv.
No. Somewhere.
Somewhere.
In Egypt.
Maybe.
Anyway, so I think it was too... He set a very, very high goals for, and it was out of lack of experience or, you know, things doesn't come like you decide and the next day it's happening. A lot of regulation, a lot of, you know, and if you have coalition or not, and So I think a lot of people disappointed of him, but he really, you know, it's kind of like education. You can't expect like results in 2 minutes. Although we are very, most of the Israelis, very desperate.
Desperate, impatient, or eager to
see
change.
Yeah, it's even more than impatient. We really want now. We want miracles because it became, it's you
So frustrating and so...
So frustrated, yeah, for a young family that both of the parents like went to school, have BA or masters and get 20,000 shekels a month and cannot imagine to buy an apartment, not a house.
Not a house, just an apartment.
So I think that's why we most of the people that voted for Yair Lapid that got 17 mandates were... wanted, yeah,
17
results.
Members of Knesset. 17. That's a huge,
it's huge.
Tremendous.
No one expected. It's out of the desperate and
a desire,
for a change, yeah, and for a we like to, you know, it's one thing that you don't have peace, but at least if you can have a nice, comfortable life. Yeah, yeah. So
decent,
yeah,
quality of life. No, I think it's fascinating, and I don't think it was an accident that Netanyahu gave him what I think is the hardest ministry in Israel because he didn't really want him to succeed. But we can talk about that another time. Yeah. Thanks, Oshrat.
You're welcome to that.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about wine. Didn't quite get to the international implications yet, but wine in Judaism has been an important beverage of sanctification and of moderation. Usually Jews don't drink a lot of wine, but a cup of Kiddush for Shabbat, a little bit of wine at Havdalah, the beginning of festivals. Passover, we drink 4 cups of wine, but it's spread out over a very long meal. The same,
and hardly anyone drinks 4 full cups.
Well, not if it's Manischewitz.
As every caterer will tell you, anybody who's in the party business, weddings, bar mitzvahs, whatever, Jewish events traditionally consume between 20% and 25% as much alcohol as non-Jewish events.
Fascinating and true. It's, you know, it's like Jackie Mason's routine. I don't want to drink, but we didn't have cake yet. Cake I want. Purim is the exception. Purim,
right,
is the time when we're supposed to drink to excess. Ad lo yada. So we can't know the difference between the hero Mordechai and the villain Haman. Odd.
Yeah, I mean, it is odd that in a religious culture and historic context, it teaches us moderation and the sanctity of drinking on special occasions and whatever, that on this one occasion, we're supposed to drink so much that we are oblivious to the difference between good and evil. It's a very interesting principle, because then are the consequences of that drinking forgiven in advance?
There is a statement in the Talmud that's kind of like that. You know, one weird story where one rabbi slits another rabbi's throat because he's so drunk on Purim, and then he's miraculously healed, and then he refuses to drink with the guy who slit his throat because he doesn't expect another miracle to happen. It's a weird story. Clearly, wine, although it enhances life, it's considered that. Talked about how in the Psalms it says, Yayin yismach levav enosh, wine gladdens the heart of human beings. Also has a downside, and there's a consciousness of it, except on Purim.
Right.
In general, Jews have become more sophisticated wine drinkers over the years, but Jews were involved in viticulture from pretty far back, no?
Yes. Jews in Europe, particularly in Christian Europe, used to depend on Jewish wine dealers to supervise the kashrut, the ritual cleanliness, purity, whatever, the suitability of the wine that they were going to drink, even if it came from other communities, because not everywhere in Europe was capable of producing wine locally. Not everywhere was a grape-growing region. Generally speaking, the better wines came from France, Italy, Germany, Austria, Hungary, maybe. But, for example, not Poland, not Lithuania,
Ukraine,
the places where many of our ancestors come from. So wine was often imported, and it was imported through networks of Jewish wine merchants who only offered their kosher customers kosher wine. They may also have had non-kosher customers to whom they offered non-kosher wine. But that was one of the early Jewish businesses. And in Poland in particular, rural Poland, which had a very large Jewish population, one of the things Jews often did was keep inns and taverns where non-Jewish peasants got drunk and racked up huge debts that later became a source of rural anti-Semitism in Poland.
You know, the most famous Jewish wine merchant, I think, was probably Rashi, the great founder of biblical commentary in the Middle Ages. And he lived in Troyes. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's written Troyes. And he was a wine merchant. That's what he did for a living. Interesting history, and we'll kind of continue about wine when we come back next week.
I look forward to that.
Thanks, Tom. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. A priest and a rabbi sit next to each other on a plane. After a while, the priest puts down his book and turns to the rabbi and says, "I know that in your religion you're not supposed to eat pork, but that seems so archaic. Have you really never tasted pork?" The rabbi sighs, closes his newspaper, and replies, "I must tell you the truth, Father. Yes, I have, but just once. I couldn't restrain myself. Nobody was watching, and I ordered and ate a BLT. The priest smiles and returns to his book. The rabbi waits a little while, and then he turns to the priest. He asks, "I know that in your Catholic religion you're supposed to be celibate, but have you never succumbed to the temptations of the flesh?" The priest looks up and answers, "Rabbi, I'm a faithful priest, but I must admit on one occasion I succumbed to temptation." The two religious leaders return to their reading. There's silence for a few moments, and then the rabbi peeks around his newspaper and asks, "Beats a BLT, doesn't it?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week in the book of Numbers, we read the odd ritualistic portion of Chukat, the rites of the red heifer. In order to achieve true ritual purity, ancient Jews were required to find a completely unblemished young red female cow, slaughter it, burn it to ashes, and mix the ashes with water to create a water of purification which to wash away ritual impurity. While many elements in the sacrificial code of our ancestors seem odd or alien, this could be the strangest of all the rituals. For it turns out that the red heifer, the Para Aduma, makes the one who is washed in its ash water pure, but it makes everybody else who comes into contact with it impure. The mystery of this is rather complete. Commentators have struggled with the meaning ever since the time the Torah was given. Just what is it that makes the red heifer the right animal to bring purity to people? And why does it make you pure if you use it properly, but make you impure when you prepare it? The classic answer to the first question is that God ordains the use of a red heifer as a symbolic reversal for the episode of the golden calf. If the people sinned by praying to an idol of a calf, then the very real slaughter and burning of an actual cow and the use of its ashes might well atone for that transgression. But why should the process of making something that cleanses us ritually turn us unclean? Perhaps the answer is also symbolic. The process of bringing holiness into our world is never easy. Working in the field of holiness creation isn't simple. When you toil in the vineyards of the Lord, there's a tendency for the muck that always exists to attach itself from the world to you. When we seek to bring purity into the lives of others, we stand a good chance of exchanging some of our own sanctity for a bit of the grime that stubbornly persists in most people's existence. The complex reversal of holiness in a sacred cow like the red heifer symbolizes the way in which we can only bring sanctity and purity at a certain price. When we acknowledge that price, accept it, and learn to cleanse ourselves ritually afterwards, we replenish our ability to help and heal others. Our guest this morning, Sean Altman, is the funniest man in Jewish music today and one of the funniest human beings doing Jewish music ever. Find out what motivated him to move from rock a cappella to Jewish humor when we come back in just a moment, right here on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from guest newscaster Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
Shalom, this is Rabbi Batsheva Appel with the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. This is a special report from Rabbi Samuel M. Kohan on the kidnapping of three Israeli teens in the West Bank. Rabbi Kohan is currently in Israel. Israel has been convulsed this week with the news that three teenage yeshiva students were kidnapped while hitchhiking from their West Bank yeshivot on Thursday night. The three boys were headed home for Shabbat, but never made it. While there has been some comment here on why on earth they would be hitchhiking in the West Bank at 11 p.m. on a Thursday night, obviously it was an unwise choice, but what are teenage boys but perfect exemplars of unwise choices? The entire country seems to be searching for them, talking about it, speculating on their fates, and praying for their safety. It seems likely that they were kidnapped either by Hamas or some group loosely allied with Hamas. But it also seems unlikely that they have been taken out of the West Bank to Gaza, but at this point, anything else is possible. Gilad Sha'er, 19, from Talmon, Eyal Yefrah, 16, from Elad, and Naftali Frankel, 16, from Nof Ayalon, went missing late Thursday night. Two of the boys attend Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz Yeshiva in Gush Etzion, a revived Orthodox settlement that predates the War of Independence, while the third teen attends yeshiva in Hebron. Prime Minister Netanyahu has publicly announced that the boys were kidnapped by terrorists, but has not released any other information. While Yefrah and Sha'er are Israelis, Naftali Frankel is an American citizen. The Israeli news has been covering this story nonstop since the boys disappeared, and every rumor and possibility is publicly discussed. It is possible that every single Israeli has a friend or relative in one or another of the security services and has inside information on the boys' fate. It is hard to imagine the fate of three teenage boys, none famous or wealthy, becoming the central focus of our own country, although stranger things have happened. But in Israel, in which everyone on every side of the political and religious divide know what it's like to send children off without knowing if they will come home, the absence of three teens from three Jewish homes strikes a chord on everyone's heart. In addition to the massive manhunt being conducted by the army and security services, there are prayers, banners, and all manner of efforts being made to save these boys. May God grant them success. At this hour, we have no certain knowledge of who has perpetrated this crime or where the boys are being held. We can only, as Rabbi Steinsaltz himself wrote, stand with idle hands, quoting Ecclesiastes, and plead to God for their rescue. Our hearts go out to their families, and our prayers are with these captive youths. May they be restored speedily and soon to their families and to their studies. May those who seek to rescue them find strength, resolve, and success in their dangerous, holy work. And may we never forget that each and every life matters to God and to our people. This is a special report from Rabbi Samuel M. Kohan on the kidnapping of three Israeli teens in the West Bank. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Sean Altman. I have confessed earlier in the show that I have become a Sean Altman groupie since discovering his almost unbelievably ahistorical and quite hysterical parody of a Passover Seder. They tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat. Sean, welcome back. Tell us.
Thanks for having me.
So
you know, it's how wonderful that I have a song called "Just Too Jew for You."
Yes.
And I'm appearing on a show called "Too Jewish." How perfect.
It was meant to be. It's beshert. It's from God, a gift. You started out doing all kinds of a cappella music, rock a cappella. You did some TV. You've done plenty of performing. Was there one moment when you decided, okay, I'm going to do some Jewish stuff?
It all started when I had, maybe it's like 8 years ago, when a prominent rabbi in New York approached me and he said, "Mr. Altman, I'm a big fan of your work. I know that you're Jewish and I think you're a great songwriter, but you never reference your Jewishness in your songs. I would like to give you a songwriting assignment, which I believe will make you feel closer to your heritage. I would like you to write a song that tells the story of Pesach." And I said, "Rabbi, I'm really grateful and honored that you would think of me for this. What's Pesach?" He explained to me that Pesach was the same as Passover. So in my research for writing this story song, which became "They Tried to Kill Us, We Survived, Let's Eat," I began reconnecting with my Hebraic roots. You know, although I was bar mitzvahed, I've been quite secular, and this has been a really nice way for me to reconnect with my ancestry via song and lyrics.
Well, you have more than connected. You have completely destroyed Jewish history in the funniest way I've ever seen.
Well, you're too kind.
You know, I've showed that to a variety of people, including my dad, who I thought would be completely horrified, and he thought it was hysterical. So there's something so broad about your humor that I think it really crosses all boundaries. You are also taller than Jesus, I'm told.
Well, there's no scientific evidence to that effect, but let's face it, 2,000 years ago, I think that it's a pretty safe bet that most people were short and that anyone who was my height, and I'm 6'3", probably would have been considered a giant. So even though I can't prove that I'm taller than Jesus, I'm comfortable saying it, and I don't think that anyone would dispute that. Of course, the song I have, "Taller Than Jesus," is a play on the John Lennon slur against Christianity when he said that in 1968 that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. So, as a Beatles fan, I've always felt compelled to defend John and say, well, he didn't mean that they were fit, that they were better than Jesus. He simply meant that they were physically bigger than Jesus. So I have a song called "Taller Than Jesus." So I don't believe I'm better than Jesus, but I think very safe to say that I'm taller than Jesus.
Yeah, I particularly like the scene where you show that you could slam dunk and Jesus surely couldn't. By the way, if you can slam dunk, you are one of the few Jews who actually can accomplish that.
Oh, if I could slam dunk, I would give up all of my musical talent. That would be such a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Yeah, I don't recommend giving up that musical talent. You also, on Jewmongous, you have one cover, which is the Ramones classic song "I Want to Be Sedated," and you parallel it with Shabbos, which I never really thought Yom Menucha, the day of rest, was a Ramon song. But now I understand that it really always was meant to be so.
Well, Joey Ramone was born of Jeffrey Hyman, and it's always been my assertion that had the other members of the Ramones also been Jewish and had encouraged him to connect with his Jewish roots, perhaps the song I Want to Be Sedated would have had a more Hebraic feel to it. So that's the Hebraic feel that I gave to it. I like to think that this is the way that Joey would have had it, would have recorded it, had the other guys not gotten in the way.
Or had it the Ramones survived long enough to really understand his Jewish roots.
Yeah. In fact, I met him several times. He was my neighbor in the East Village in Manhattan, and I actually sang backup for him a couple of times.
That's pretty cool. You've sung with a lot of people. I saw a video of you guys when you were a cappella singing with Billy Joel.
We backed Billy Joel two nights at Madison Square Garden in, I think it was 1991. I've sung with Chuck Berry and a lot of people.
Why did Billy Joel's rabbi tell him that he had never explored his own Jewish heritage?
Yeah, so Billy, that's a tricky one. I think maybe is it his dad, or there's some Jewish ancestry but
it's actually, believe
for me,
or not,
the big one is does he self-identify as Jewish? Yeah. And he doesn't.
No,
sadly.
No.
I wish we could claim him for our people, but we just can't.
I'm going to keep doing it. I don't care. That's okay. Simon and Garfunkel only sang about Jesus loves you more than you can know, and they are both, I mean, you know,
yes,
from Queens.
Yes, they were, even though Art Garfunkel did like a weird Christian album with Amy Grant early in his career, and I can't forgive him for that.
Well, but, you know, what about Bob Dylan, you know, whose bar mitzvah was at my dad's shul, but, you know, he's did the, but he came back somewhere. You have an absolutely hysterical version of papal anti-Semitism. Pope Antisemiticus the 13th, I think, is featured. Can you talk about that cut a little bit?
Yes. I managed to offend Italian people, Catholics, and who else did I manage to offend?
Maybe even Jews. I don't know.
I managed to offend a lot of people with one song. I've gotten a little bit of flack for that. Because, first of all, historically, there have been the most egregious anti-Semitic statements have come from the Vatican. I mean, in the year, I think it's Pope... I forget his name. One of the popes in the 13th century said the most despicable things about our people. So there is historical precedent, the idea of blaming the Jews for everything is something that, listen, a lot of people claim that the Holocaust happened because the Jews were blamed for everything. We're blamed for bad economy in Eastern Europe, blamed for the killing of Christ, blamed for having too much control over the banks. This is still going on, and Jews do get blamed for the most absurd things. And so I wrote a tarantella, which is the classic Italian party song,
at every Italian wedding.
And it's sung in a terrible Italian accent by Pope Antisemiticus II.
It's hysterical.
It's called Blame the Jews.
Blame of the Jews.
If you look up Blame the Jews song on YouTube, you'll see me dressed as the Pope in my $40 crappy Pope outfit.
A very tall Pope, I might add, also.
Yes.
Definitely taller than Jesus. You also have, I think, a flair for some of the incomprehension we Jews share about our own heritage. One of my favorite songs is not quite as broadly based, What the Hell is Simchas Torah? Talk a little bit about sort of the, as you rediscover your Jewish roots or express them in satire, there are some of them that just don't make any sense.
That one is strange. After I wrote it and after I recorded it, my Orthodox friend said to me, no, you shouldn't have written the song called What the Hell is Simchas Torah, because everybody knows what that one is. It should have been What the Hell is Shavuos or
Shavuos, right, or Tisha B'Av or something.
Yeah, Tisha B'Av. But that makes it even more poetic, the fact that I chose a holiday that a lot of people know about, but for some reason I didn't know about. You know, as I said, I'm quite secular, and I grew up hearing about this thing called Simchas Torah, and it was always fun to say because of the sound, but I never knew what it was, and none of my secular friends knew about it either. You know, when I performed the song in the show, I presented it as my attempt to learn about everything Jewish via the significance of the many, many Jewish holidays. So in my secular world, everybody knows what Passover is. Some people know what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is, and some people know what Hanukkah is. But beyond that, in the secular world, it's a total mystery. We have no idea what Simchas Torah, Tisha B'Av, Shavuos. It's all, you know, Shmini Atzeret. It's all just weird Hebrew gobbledygook. So that was my attempt to express the secular perspective about Jewish holidays.
All right, so if I could commission you, I would ask for some Purim songs, because there's really not a lot of good Purim songs, and any one of your songs could be.
You know, I actually started writing one, and I haven't finished it yet, but maybe now that we've spoken, that'll be the impetus for me to get it ready for the next tour.
I would love to hear it. I would love to debut it on the air, because we really do need better Purim songs.
Hey, are there any? Sure there are.
There are Purim songs. They're just not good. And so then we do parodies. There's a lot of great Hanukkah songs now. There's even a lot of great funny Hanukkah songs. But people just don't, you know, Purim is inherently funny. It ought to work.
Sure.
It's about, you know, drunks marrying... drunken kings marrying Jewish women. It ought to be a story all by itself.
Yeah, and actually, my daughter, she can tell you the story of Purim better than I can at this point. So she would love it if I wrote a song about it.
That's not such a bad thing. Sean, you married, as you say, a J-date Jewess who also happens to be an opera singer. Tell us about how that came about.
I'm sorry?
I have to hear how that came about. This is a Jewish...
Well, it's my second marriage. The first time around, I was married to a shiksa, and that didn't go so well for me. So the second time around, I said, you know what, I'm going to stick to what I know. So we both were on J-date, and she was a successful opera singer, and I'm the father of modern a cappella. And, of course, we naturally clicked. We're two singers. Our goal is to procreate and create a master race of singers.
And so far...
so far, we've created one master singer.
The mezzo, soprano, what are you expecting here?
She's a lyric soprano. So for those opera buffs out there, that means that in La Boheme, she would sing the role of Mimi,
yes.
or she would sing the role of the Violetta in La Traviata.
So that means that basically she's going to get to die on stage someday.
I've seen her die of every kind of upper respiratory illness there is. And I've seen her murdered a few times on stage, too. It's sad. It's sad. Sopranos particularly get to die the most grisly deaths in opera.
Opera's very tough on sopranos. I want to thank Sean Altman for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish. Too short, but we will be playing one more of his cuts before we finish. Sean, Jewmungus, what's the best place to find out about the music and get the music?
Jewmungus.com, and I've registered every possible misspelling of the word Jewmungus, so if you just spell it any way that you think, it'll come to my website. Also, you can like Jewmungus on Facebook.
We encourage everyone to do so. They can do it in Hebrew, too. Jewmungus, I think, is the... And Sean, thanks so much, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout from Jewmungus on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique,
Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Rabbi Leon Morris, talking about the Reform Movement's new Machzor, the first new High Holy Day prayer book for the largest movement in world Jewry in 35 years. Our playout this morning comes from whom else? Our guest Sean Altman and his Jewmongous CD. It's called Just Too Jew for You. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavuot Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Roll over here to my side of your bed. It's been a year, who knows where we're headed. Our souls entwined along with our limbs. But in my mind, a suspicion so grim.
It embarrasses you when I check the check at a fancy restaurant. And you hate eating bagels and lox for breakfast when bacon's what you want. We've shared wine and song and fluid, still it's time to say adieu. For though you think